Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, we're in the Quicken Loan Studios in New York on CBS Sports Radio. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully. Mortgage confidently. Justin Thomas coming off a great win this past weekend in Akron at Firestone. Defending his title now in St. Louis as the world's best, including Tiger Phil, DJ, Jason Day, Ricky, Rory, all eyeing the prestigious Ferrella Maker Trophy. It's the season's final major, the 100th PGA Championship, this weekend on CBS. Hi, friends. Football is back in the biggest way possible. Tons of pro games tonight, two on Friday, two on Saturday. College football right around the corner doing push-ups. Tons of pro games that are happening now. You want the best picks? PharrellOnTheBench.com has them every game, every sport, every day. Baseball, boxing, MMA, daily fantasy, it's all there. Don't miss out on the football season, college and pro. I'm going to kill it as usual. PharrellOnTheBench.com. Sign up today. All right. Chris Swick is back with us from Yahoo Sports to talk baseball. How you doing, Chris? Hope you're having a good summer.
I'm doing well. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Scott, so I'm excited.
My man. So Jason Wirth, who disappeared off the face of the earth, but he's found a way to get everybody going today with his comments. Did you see his comments about super nerds and front offices that know nothing about baseball and saber metrics and all this other nonsense? Do you agree with him that he said that the nerds are killing baseball?
You know, I think it's a little half and half for me. So I came up, I started at Fangraphs, so I am definitely into all the nerd numbers. I generally enjoy them. I think there's maybe some truth in what he said, and I think we're maybe seeing a little bit of that now, where a lot of these teams are built to maximize profit. So we had that really slow free agent period last winter. I think partially sabermetrics played a role in at least how teams started to view players. And I also think the Rays whole experiment with the relievers as starters has been part of that too, which is not really something I'm a fan of. I think it makes for a less enjoyable game. So while I think 5 years ago I probably would have made fun of Jason Wirth, I have to say I see a few kernels of truth in what he said.
Well, so why – explain to me why the throwing Romo out there. If he gets everybody out, what do I care if he's a starter or a reliever? I need outs. I need to make plays. If the starter can't get anybody out, I'll bring in the beer man if he can get outs.
No, I think you're right. I think in that sense, if it's working, sure. I guess my concern would be I think in my mind, maybe there should be restrictions on how many pitching changes you can make in that situation. Because suddenly, if you're looking at bringing in a guy and he can only last two batters and you've got, you know, 12 or 13 pitching changes per game and games are suddenly 4.5 hours, which I know we're getting that anyway, but just to have it more drawn out, I think is part of my concern. I also think the reason you're seeing the Rays do it, you know, could be to suppress salary. I mean, they're a team that usually spends a lot, and by not having to pay starters, I think you gain a little bit of an edge that way. So I'm not saying they're explicitly doing that, but I think there's a reason you're not seeing a team like the Yankees do it, is because they can afford to pay for starters every year.
Yeah, I got to ask you, I don't have a problem going to the baseball game for 3.5-4 hours. Everybody seems to get worked up about it. But when I go to the baseball game, I want to sit there and watch the game. I want to eat popcorn. I want to have a hot dog. I want to have 7 beers. And I want to have an ice cream, and I want to look at chicks, and I want to watch the game, and I don't care that it's a four-hour night because it's what I planned on doing that night anyway. I go to the game. I don't want to, like, are you kidding? Like, I used to go to games with my dad in Pittsburgh, right, at Three Rivers when I was a kid, and I was watching, like, the 71 and 79 Pirates win world championships. I never once went to a game and said, you know, Dad, this is awesome. We just got here 2 hours ago, and we're already leaving. I never once in my life ever said that when I went to a sporting event. How quick can we get out of here unless your team's getting their ass beat? Why all this ridiculousness with the length of a game?
Well, you know, I think you bring up an interesting point. I think there's a big divide between how fans view the game and maybe how people who have to cover the game view it. Because, yeah, I mean, if I go to a game and then I'm there as a fan, I also don't really care. If I'm covering the game, you know, I'm obviously putting more hours in, and I want to get home and, you know, hang out with my family before everyone goes to bed. So,
but that's the job you choose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And
I mean, how does this stuff? Hold on a second. Let me ask you this right while you're at it. I hate to interrupt you, but because I'm going to ask you, you're the writer, you're the reporter, you do this for a living. Why would you, like, I get it, because I've done it. I used to cover baseball every day and go to the game and sit there, and I'd be like, God, when am I going to get out of here? And I used to do play-by-play. I used to do everything. I'd be like, when am I getting out of here? But my point is, and I'm going to say this, why do it for a living if you don't want to be there writing about it? Or, like, you know, it's the game's too long for you, or you want to get home to your wife and kids. I get all that, but why do it then?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously I do it because I love the game. I think it's maybe frustrating when, you know, a team has like a 5-run lead in the ninth inning and you're seeing a pitching change and you're just kind of thinking like, I don't know, do we really need to make this change? The game's kind of out of hand. So I guess I'm more in those situations where it just logically you can't figure it out, and then it gets puzzling, and then you get more frustrated because you're sitting at the park longer than
right.
You
but
should.
When you're
game that,
when you're there, though, tell me I'm wrong. That I've never seen anything like it. Where I sit in the press box, I've done it a million times, and I've sat there and listened to all these guys complaining about how long the game is. I mean, I've actually sat there and listened to guys the entire night complain about how long the game is that are doing it for a living, and I used to always think to myself, what a bunch of putzes I'm sitting here with. But all they do is cry about how long the game is and how they want to go. Well, then go home, you wuss.
Yeah, I guess that's a fair point. Maybe I'm just being a stick in the mud about it.
No, I'm not saying you're that. I'm saying I've sat and listened to people.
Yeah.
I don't understand from the fan perspective or the broadcast perspective. You know what it is? It's when you are a broadcaster or you're writing and you do it every single night of your life for 6 months, and you want to pull your hair out, you're burned out, you're spent, you're shot, you've covered a million games, and you just are sick of it after a while, especially if your team's not in it. I understand that, but I've never really understood the crying about the length of baseball games. Like, you know, I just don't get it. The game's too slow. They're changing too many trips to the mound. I'm like, why are they trying to change the game so much?
That's a great question. I don't have a good answer for that. I don't know why Rob Manfred has made that his big point. And I don't know why. I think, you know, he looks at it as the younger generation maybe wants a faster game. And I don't really know that that's borne out. I think a lot of the younger fans I know have kind of echoed the same sentiment you have, where they don't care. They find it to be a fun, enjoyable experience. Length of game is, I don't think, high on their list of complaints. So it is puzzling to me that he's made this his crusade.
I think there's kids, actually. I'll be honest with you. There are kids. I know. I have kids. So, and you have kids, whatever. I don't know the whole deal. But I know this, is that they don't like baseball. They're just like, it's boring. It sucks. I'd rather do this. I'd rather do that. They just don't care about it. And it's weird because I've always loved baseball my whole life. I don't understand how what's happened to the game is that kids just don't like it anymore. That's what's happening to the game. It's not because of all the stupid the stats. It's not because of exit velocity or home run angle or launch or speed or the fast pitches and everything else. It's because they're trying to tinker with the game so much, shifts and all this other stuff, is that the bottom line is that kids – between the ages of, let's say, 8 and 15 think it sucks. I mean, completely think it sucks to the point where they are not interested in watching it at all, ever. How's that for you?
I think that's a strong opinion, and I guess I would say, what do you feel like can be done to maybe get the audience back?
Leave it alone. Let the game be, and stop cutting off beer sales in the seventh inning. Let people have fun and go to the game and eat food. You know, is there anything worse than in the seventh inning of a good game, I go out and the goddamn concession stand is closed and I can't get Carver High a beer? I mean, can I just drink and spend my money until the game's over? Thank you very much, ma'am. And stop with all the changing of the rules and everything else and the speed of the game and the shifts and everything and all this stuff. Just play baseball. And it's just like they said, chicks dig the long ball. You know, they've wrapped the ball so tight now that all we see is home runs and guys hitting 200. Maybe if the game would be better, maybe less than, you know, 90% of the league hits 200. Maybe if someone could hit, the game would be more exciting. What they have now is a league full of pitchers and no one can hit.
Yeah, and I think getting back to your original point, that, or at least the thing that Worth said, I think some of that has to do with sabermetrics. Kind of, we've seen the death of that perfect number two hitter who hits 330, maybe isn't going to hit 20 home runs, but is a guy who hits for high average, steals bases, gets on base at a good clip. I feel like those guys have really been washed out of the league in favor of power. So I think that's part of the sabermetric influence, and I don't really know how you combat that at this point. I feel like they need drastic things to get that player back in the game.
You know, this is very interesting stuff. I never even imagined that I'd ask you all these questions or seem so angry about it, because it does bother me. But let's hang in here. I want to ask you some more stuff about Derek Jeter, Verlander, Javi Baez, hot seat, you know, managers on the – that might be losing their job. I got a lot more baseball to talk with you as I'm watching the Pirates launch home runs tonight against the Giants. And I got to tell you, I have no interest in the game ending at all. In fact, I hope they hit 5 more home runs, and I hope the game's on till 1:45 a.m. New York time. And then at the last break I do, I'll go wash my hands and then go home. I have never seen anything like people complaining about baseball being too long. It's just like, my God. All right, we're talking to Chris Swick. We'll do more baseball talk with him on the bench.
You're listening to Pharrell on the Bench.
So, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Hey, everybody, here's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Do you need homeowners, renters, motorcycle, or boat insurance? Get it all at geico.com. Chris Swick is with us from Yahoo Sports. So, you know, one of the things I think that baseball needs, and it's getting right now, to be honest with you, is I believe the small markets like the A's and the Pirates doing well. And I said this before back in the days. I was on MLB Network one day arguing with this guy. Who's the guy? Sherman, is he the guy from the New York Post that's on there? I'll never forget it. They had me on once, and I argued with him for an hour. And then they never had me back, as usual. But that's fine with me because I was right and he was wrong. And the argument I had was baseball is better when small market teams are in it. It is good for baseball that the A's are making trades for Rodney and that the Pirates made trades to try to go for it when all they've ever done is sold off the farm. And it is bad for baseball when only the Yankees and Red Sox do well and the Dodgers, in my opinion. You got to have a couple of small market teams. And the argument back then with Sherman is that the Royals and Pirates, I thought would have been an exciting World Series, and I said that you know, I'd love it if two small market teams made it, and Kansas City is a great baseball town, and it would be great for the Royals to win the World Series, because back in the day when I covered them in 85 and they won it, it was no joke then, was it? Everybody, George Brett, Saber Hagen, no one was laughing then. And then when they went to back-to-back World Series here in recent years, that was good for baseball, Chris.
I absolutely agree. Yeah, I think the A's thing has been probably my favorite story of the season, you know, not only because they came in with such low expectations, but I think they started the year with the lowest payroll in baseball. So to see them do it and to have them be a small market team, and not only that, but to have them just be this massive underdog, I think that's been tremendous. And, you know, I don't know if you consider Seattle a small market. I mean, that's where I'm living now. But seeing them, I think, surprise a little bit has also been entertaining to me. So those are two of the better stories in my mind this season. And then, like you said, the Pirates, obviously, really, you could put them in the same boat.
Yeah, I love it, and I think it's good for the game. I really don't think there's anything wrong with a game. First of all, I always look at the Cofers. Are the Cofers filled? Yes, everybody's making tons of money. Players that are hitting 210 make $20 million. There's nothing wrong with baseball. What's wrong is everybody trying to change it all the time. Just leave it alone. That's what we do in the summer. We watch baseball. If you don't like it, go play beach volleyball or golf or something where you can lie and steal from your friends. Gambling, drinking, and everything, have at it. Baseball, leave it alone. There's nothing wrong with it. Derek Jeter says the Marlins are headed in the right direction. Do you believe that? And should he be at the Yankees 98 reunion celebration they're having in the Bronx? He's the only guy, it appears, that's blowing it off.
I feel like he should be there just because of how much he means to the franchise. It's as far as the Marlins, I mean, you could probably say they're heading in the right direction, but only because I don't think they can get worse from here. So I do think they've made some efforts to bring in more minor league talent, but they were starting with a pretty bare cupboard to begin with. And so you're pretty much at a point where any prospect they bring in via trade or the draft is going to improve them. So kind of, I guess you have to buy just based on that, but I still think they have a real long way to go before they're anywhere close to competing.
Ohtani going to throw the ball this weekend. Is that a good or bad idea for them?
I think it's a huge risk, and I don't really, I guess I know they're 500 right now. They have a real tough task ahead of them if they're going to try and jump three teams in the AL West, or I guess technically two if they want to get a wild card spot. And I just feel like with being that far out of it, to risk him re-injuring that elbow and having to have Tommy John and potentially missing all of 2019, it's just not worth it to me. If they were maybe two games out, I can see it. They're 10.5 out of a wild card spot right now.
So, Chris Wickwood of Yahoo Sports, do you see Verlander got tossed out of that game tonight in the second inning for arguing after he got called for a balk?
Oh, I didn't see that. That's, I mean, I guess I'm not surprised because he's just a crazy competitor, but that can't be good. I mean, just he's not giving his team a chance to win if he's getting thrown out in the second inning.
He said that Kate Upton saved his life.
Yes.
And are you surprised that she ended up with him and not me?
I feel like that's a trap, so I feel like I shouldn't comment on that one.
All right. Javi Baez, do you think he should be the MVP, Javi Baez?
I think he's got a legitimate case, which is probably more than I would have thought at the beginning of the season. I think there's... That the NL is really tough because you can make a case for Matt Carpenter, Nolan Arenado, Freddie Freeman. So I kind of feel like based on that, I think the voters care about names, and so they'd probably lean those guys over Baez. But I don't know that Baez is right there for me, basically.
So when you see the Red Sox sweep the Yankees, do you think when you're watching that on Sunday, that comeback walk-off, Did you at any point say they're going to win the World Series?
I just think they've done such a good job distancing themselves from the whole rest of the league that, in my mind, they have to be considered favorites right now.
So do you think Seattle, who's now fallen behind the A's, the said A's that we were speaking of, that they will catch back up and get back in it, or are they toast?
I think it's going to be tough. I think a lot of their success early in the year was built on some things that were going to be tough to depend on moving forward. Their bullpen has just been ridiculously good, and it's hard to trust all those arms to keep it up over the course of the entire season. So I've seen the holes there. That said, I also think Oakland has a lot of holes, too. I think the difference is Oakland's been a little more proactive with trades, and so I like what they've done the last couple weeks, and that has made me believe that they're maybe the better team.
Do you think the Cubs will finish off the Brewers?
I think they will. I think up and down that team is a better roster, and if they can get Yu Darvish back and pitching anywhere close to where he was a couple years ago, I think that is a big separator for them.
Is Arizona the surprise team based on, in my view, their bullpen is now that of the Yankees? If you ask me, I think the Yankees have a better bullpen, but I think the Diamondbacks bullpen now is the second toughest in baseball.
Yeah, I think they're definitely up there, and they were another team that really went out at the deadline and made sure to pick up a couple more pieces. I think you've seen that with a lot of these clubs where maybe the starting pitching isn't as great, but they're just kind of picking up as many relievers as possible, hoping that you can get by with maybe 4 or 5 inning starts from guys and then rely on that in the postseason, which is something we've seen the last couple years. So I think relief pitching is really become, it seems like, a lot more important these last few years.
So lastly, do you think Socha will stay or go at the end of the season?
Oh, man, I feel like after we heard the rumors, I feel like he's probably going. But it would probably have to be his choice because it seems like they just love him in L.A.
Chris, killer stuff tonight, brother. Enjoy the late night games and have a great weekend. We'll talk to you as we get closer toward the end of the season and get ready for October when no one ever complains about the length of games.
Sounds good to me. I'll stick it out and be up till 2 a.m. if I ask you to talk to you, Scott.
That's what I'm talking about. I like that dedication right there. He doesn't want to leave the bench. He wants to leave the press box to get home to his beer and wife. I love that action. Chris Swick of Yahoo Sports. So do you notice that, Jay Berman, that like people complain about the game all season long about how you know, slow it is, it's not fast enough, blah, blah, blah. But then in October when it's playoff games and every single pitch counts, you never hear anyone complain about the length of a game.
Yeah, you're totally right. But it's also 6 months. You can't do that for 6 months. It's too much. It's too many regular season games.
I agree. But to me, going from 162 to 154 is a waste of time.
I agree with you. They need to chop like 20.
That's what I agree with that.
Jay wants to go to the game and be home in 2 hours and 10 minutes, so there's no point in even having to.
That's right.
Meanwhile, the guy will go to 14 straight Fish concerts, but he can't sit through a four-hour baseball night.
Wants to pay all that money to go to the game and wants to be home in 2 hours.
Do you agree
with
me?
I ain't got the time.
Do you agree with me that you should be able to get food and beer till the end of the game?
Of course. Of course.
Is there anything worse than seventh inning beer stop?
It's a legal thing. They're covering their ass.
But that it just doesn't matter. That doesn't work. That does not stop people from drunk driving, shutting off the beer in the seventh inning. Trust me, you know what people do when they run out of beer? They got a flask in their car. They got beers on ice, and they got a big bag of reefer.
But you can't sue the team for that.
I know one thing. I mean, if I go to the game and I drink a beer per inning up until the seventh,
you're good.
I'm still walking out of that place
hammered.
So. Like you said, if that's what you're trying to do to prevent it, I mean, there's
what is it gonna do?
Ways around
it. I mean, I get it. People, you know what? People yell and cuss and scream and get in fights and racial fights and everything else, no matter if they're drinking or not. They do. It doesn't matter if you're drinking.
It's true.
Drinking escalates it. I won't deny that. But people are going to get in fights either way. You know why? Because no one's ever wrong. Have you ever seen arguments where everyone thinks they're right and no one's ever wrong? That's the problem. People start arguing. There's no end to it except fists. Okay? That's how it ends. I'm going to tell you about this Wake Forest guy, this coach, when I come back. This guy's in a whole hell of a lot of trouble. He punched some guy, and the guy ended up dead in New York.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You're listening to Pharrell on the Bench.
I thought Baker Mayfield looked great tonight. Seriously, I was watching him play, and I just thought he looked so composed. And in the pocket, he didn't have happy feet. He was, like, dodging pass rushers and stepping up in the pocket and breaking down defenders, breaking ankles, getting to the sideline, getting first downs, throwing touchdowns, throwing ropes down the sideline, back shoulder passes. I thought he looked phenomenal, to be honest with you, at the end of the day. And, I mean, that was impressive for a first game. And what did you think of Josh Allen with that rope he threw for a touchdown for the Bills between two defenders? Dangerous, but it worked. How did you think Mayfield looked and Josh Allen looked?
I'm with you 100% on Mayfield. I thought what impressed me the most about him was, like you said, no happy feet. When he felt the rush, avoided it nicely, stepped up in the pocket, threw the football. I thought that he did all the things that you like to see from a guy
right.
who, let's be honest, never played in an NFL game before in his life, and he got out there and did it. For my guy, he played in the second half. I only saw the highlights so far. I do always go back and like to just check out the whole second half. I'll go and look at that online. But the zip that he had on the touchdown was great. He had a really crazy play earlier where he pretty much ran backwards about 25 yards, which wasn't pretty at all. But first time out there, I thought he played well.
So there was a lot of guys tonight playing in these games, and you get to see them for the first time perform. And, you know, I think Barkley looked great running the football. I mentioned that. You know, Andrew Luck led a couple of TD drives for the Colts, scoring drives. I know he didn't throw any, but he did go 6-9 for 64 yards, and he led a couple of drives. So he looked good. The big story, I thought, was, frankly, this whole thing, believe it or not, with Cam Newton before the game in Buffalo, that he went up to his old buddy Kelvin Benjamin, who played for the Panthers early in his career, and we all know what happened. It was a bad fit from the get-go. If you would have put me with any other quarterback, let's be real, you know what I'm saying. So he thinks that Cam Newton basically sucks is what he's saying in that, in not so many words.
Correct.
And so Newton went up to him before the game and reached out to shake his hand, and he refused to shake Cam Newton's hand. And then he waved off a coach that was standing there with him, and he tried to have a conversation with him about their problems. And it was apparent that Benjamin wanted no part of it. And he was walking him off, and Newton was following him around. And then eventually he said, all right, well, then if we're going to be enemies, screw it. Let's go with it. And then he walked off to the end zone. So he apparently – it. What I saw was a guy saying, all right, if we're not going to squash it, then let's get it on. We hate each other now.
That's definitely how it ended, was Newton walking away like, all right, it's like that. And he walked away from him. Now, when he initially approached him and you said how he wouldn't shake his hand, I don't know – who knows what Cam said to him as he was approaching him. That maybe that would have caused Benjamin not to shake his hand. Who knows? But he knows what he said about him in the article. Knows what he said, so it couldn't have been too cordial when Cam was walking up.
Obviously, Benjamin doesn't like him.
Yes, there's no doubt about that.
So, but it doesn't matter because he's gone now.
That's it. It's over.
So we can leave it at that. That they hate each other. That's awesome. At least we have something going here. A little bitterness toward one another. I have to keep turning off the mic, Mafia, because I'm sick as a dog. And I'm like, in here, you have no idea the suffering.
It shows how much of a professional you are that you know to do that. So many guys will just be coughing, hacking, doing things on air.
I used to do that.
Yeah, you used to do that on purpose, though. That wasn't like, oh, well, it just happens. You wanted to do that.
Right. So I'm in here with the summer cold.
You know who else looked good? You said that scrum by Lamar Jackson for the touchdown.
I thought you were going to say I look good.
No. Not in this condition. You don't.
All right. So who looked good?
Lamar Jackson had a very nice scramble for the Ravens where, you know, the protection broke down, kind of avoided a guy or two, then broke through the line and avoided a guy just before the end zone and got in for a touchdown.
He
like
was
a 15-yard scramble.
He had 119 yards in that game. How so no TDs, 6.6 average. He was sacked, I think, twice. And
he
then
rushed for the touchdown that I was talking about.
Is that right? He didn't get a touchdown rushing. It was Griffin that rushed for
that
a
touchdown. That was RG3?
Oh, RG3 definitely had a touchdown. I don't know if he threw it or ran it. Flacco had one as well. Rushing, I think, let's see, RG3, no TD. So he threw that pass. And then Jackson, obviously, he did have a rushing touchdown. You're right. He ran one in, did not throw one. So He ran for 21 yards on 5 carries, had a 9-yard run. That must have been the TD or something, right?
Yeah, so, it was.
So one of the problems with the Rams tonight getting spanked was that they didn't play anybody. There was no Goff or anything. They just went with Brandon Allen and Sean Mannion. You know you're going to have a long night when you got them going.
Listen, these games don't matter. They do not matter. They have absolutely zero impact on your season. There's only one way that your season can get impacted by these games. And you know what that
injuries.
Is. When they cart you off, that's when your season gets impacted by these stupid, meaningless games that they're playing here over the next month. So what the Rams did tonight is actually the way you should do every single one of these games. And that's not play the guys that are going to play a big part in what you have to do to get to where you want to be.
So I remember Deshaun Kizer, wasn't he the Browns starter? He's a cast off now in Green Bay. He had 134 yards tonight in their win over Tennessee. Luke Falk, isn't that the draft pick that they got Tennessee? He had 105 yards and a touchdown. Blaine Gabbert, Mariota all played. Mariota just for a couple, I think one series. Brett Hundley still with Green Bay somehow. 108 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. Aaron Rodgers. He was probably on the sideline talking about how much his receivers suck. Let's see what else. The Texans win. Brandon Whedon, two touchdowns in that game. Deshaun Watson, I think he was 1 for 1, 4 yards. I don't know what went on there. Maybe they let him play one series or something. Chad Henne was the, I think the Chiefs quarterback. They had four guys going. Patrick Mahomes, 5 of 7 for 33 yards and a 4.7 average. Matt McGloin, basically the same numbers. Chad Henne did a little bit better than these other guys and threw for a touchdown. And Kansas City still lost the game to Houston. So there you go. I'm just looking at these games. They're very important to me. The Patriots did it. Brian Hoyer bringing them back. They were losing in that game, but he threw for 144 yards, a 6.3 average, 16 of 23. Danny Etling, who was a draft pick, 2 of 5 for 21 yards in his debut. Colt McCoy, 189 yards and 2 touchdowns. Nice performance by McCoy and the Redskins. They had a big lead, and they still lost that game at Gillette like everybody else does. The Saints over the Jags, 24-20. And Taysom Hill, 72 yards. Tom Savage, remember he was going to be a star in Houston? Remember they turned to Tom Savage. He's still 10 of 14, 70 yards. And then JT Barrett is on that team. He did nothing. And Cody Kessler for Jacksonville, 139 yards and a TD. Bortles, 6 of 9. Tanner Lee even got some action. The Saints win the game over the Jags, 24-20. So the Steelers, I want to see what Mason Rudolph did. He was 7-12 for 101 yards, 8.4 average. He was sacked twice. Joshua Dobbs, 91 yards and a TD and a pick. Landry Jones, a TD as well. They spanked the Eagles. Nate Sudfeld and Joe Callahan, your next-door neighbor, were the quarterbacks for the Eagles there tonight. No signs of Wentz or Foles as the Steelers roll in Philadelphia. No sign of anything other than them winning. We told you all about the Browns win. The Buccaneers got a late field goal to beat the Dolphins. And in that game, they had Ryan Griffin through for a TD. Jameis Winston, 102 yards and a 7.8 average. Ryan Fitzpatrick threw for 55 yards on 6 of 8. Miami had Brock Osweiler in there, 83 yards. David Fales, 115 yards. Bryce Petty threw for a TD. And Ryan Tannehill, 4 of 6 for 32 yards. So a lot of guys saw action tonight, and that's what they want in these games. We told you the Panthers won that game over the Bills, 28-23. The Bears fell short in Cincinnati, 30-27. All I care about in that one is Trubisky, 2 of 4, 4 yards. He did nothing. Chase Daniel, 76 yards. Tyler Bray, 219 yards. We saw them in the Hall of Fame game, and now we've seen them play their second game. Remember, they're playing 5 games. Andy Dalton, 103 yards, 2 touchdowns in the game. Matt Barkley, 64 yards. Jeff Driscoll, 140 yards and a touchdown. The Bengals win by 3. And then I'm watching Colts down 10-9 to Seattle, and I got the Cowboys up 14-10 on the Niners, and I can't breathe. Cooper Rush, what a name. He has 71 yards in the game. Dak, 39 yards and a TD. Beathard, 160 yards and a pick for the Niners. Jimmy had 34 yards, and that was it. 3 of 6 for 34 yards. Cowboys up 4. So are you glad that, Mafia, that there's football back? I mean, even though it's preseason and it's meaningless, Carver High doesn't like it. But are you glad that there's football?
I'm glad it's back because that's one step closer to the regular season. That's one step closer to the fantasy kicking up again, to the season going, where my Sundays have meaning once more. I mean, in the summer, it's fun. Yeah, you get to maybe go lay at the pool a little
bit. Your Sundays are gambling and alcohol fused.
Yeah, once the fall starts, yeah, that's what it's all about. Let's go watch some football games, drink some beers, gamble, and now we can gamble legally. I'm all for it. This is what August is all about. It's not about the end of the summer or kids going back to school. It's about football being around the corner.
Mafia doesn't stop serving beer in the seventh inning either. When he watches an NFL game, he drinks until he goes to bed, not when the game's over or in the third quarter. He drinks beer until he goes to bed.
Pretty much. Sometimes there's a little bit left. I don't even finish it because I'm drinking all the way to the end.
How is the sausage and peppers?
Delicious. 34C does a great job with sausage and peppers always.
So when we come back, I'm going to tell you this story about this Wake Forest assistant who's in all kinds of trouble. I said I was going to do it before. I still haven't done it, but I'm planning on doing it. I'm under a tremendous amount of pressure tonight, and I cannot breathe at all. Anyway, I'll live. Hopefully. I don't know if it's true that I'll live, but I'm hoping to live through this. There's nothing worse than a summer cold. I want to kill myself, and sleeping sucks too.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.